First, taxpayer-funded pensions for members of Congress could become a thing of the past under recently proposed legislation from two Republican senators. The End Pensions in Congress Act, or EPIC Act, comes in response to the longest government shutdown in American history. Instead of pensions, lawmakers would instead have to rely on their thrift savings plans, essentially a government equivalent of a 401k. While the legislation probably has a slim chance of passing, there have been other calls to cut lawmakers' pay or prevent senators and congressional representatives from collecting paychecks during government shutdowns. Michael Hiltzik is a business columnist for the Los Angeles Times. His recent column on this issue is titled, "Here's Why Congress Deserves a Pay Raise." Yes, a raise. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob. It's good to be on with you.
Let's talk about this EPIC Act, the End Pensions in Congress Act. Two Republican senators, Rick Scott and Mike Braun. What was your reaction to the introduction of that bill?
My immediate reaction is that this is a sort of cynical proposal that you would expect from these two guys, both of whom are multimillionaires. Scott, in particular, made his money at a company that he led that was guilty of a spectacular fraud against the federal government. So I'm not sure anybody really wants to rely on them for proposals with any integrity.
The big thing is, I think a lot of people look at Congress and say they don't get much done. The bums in Congress is a old American standby. So why pay them a lot? Why pay them well? Why give them pensions if they're not producing, I guess?
Sure. Well, that's a good question. And you're right. This is a very common sort of trope or meme among the public that these guys are do-nothings, they're lazy, they're just at the public trough. We all know all of the lines. The fact is that you don't want your federal legislators, just as you don't really want your state legislators, to be living in penury or pinching pennies, because you want to be able to attract people from all walks of life to these jobs. You don't want the jobs to go only to people who can afford to do them because they are low-wage jobs. You want people who, you know, for whom this is a good wage, maybe even a better wage than they're getting in their daily lives, because you want people who actually come from the middle class and the working class to want to serve in Congress or in your state legislature.
Is there a bias toward wealthier people getting into Congress and the Senate, even with their current levels of pay and their potential pension benefits?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that the two chambers of Congress, especially the Senate, have become plutocrat havens. I think the last time that the median net worth of U.S. senators was calculated, and I think that goes back to 2015, the median net worth was something like $3.2 million. The median net worth of members of Congress, that is to say representatives, was something in the neighborhood of $900,000 or maybe $1 million. And that was back in 2015. It's probably a little bit higher now. Some members of Congress are billionaires. Do we really want our lawmakers to be drawn entirely from that class? My argument was, I don't think so.
Talking to Michael Hiltzik, business columnist at the Los Angeles Times, looking at a proposal to cut pensions for members of Congress and the U.S. Senate. Michael, you broke down how much or what it takes to get these pensions and how many people are using them. Can you tell us what some of the numbers are?
Sure. There are two different pension, that's to say defined benefit pensions, classic pensions, many workers understand them. These are the sorts of pensions that are going away in the private sector, but there are two different systems that have to do with when the members of Congress served. For those served prior to 1984, they get one system that pays somewhat better. For those elected after 1984, they get another system. The older members, they're receiving an average annual pension, that is the retirees, of about $74,000 a year. Those in the later system are earning or collecting an average of about $41,000. And as I pointed out, that is higher than the median private pension in the country, which is about $9,300 a year, or even the average federal employee pension, which is about $22,000. But let's not forget that members of Congress are better paid than most working Americans. They're getting $174,000 a year to serve in Washington.
That's members of the House. What is it? What does a gig like the U.S. Senate pay year to year?
Well, the Senate and House members all get the same annual salary of $174,000.
Have there been a lot of calls? Has it been a political football over the decades, arguments about pay raises, pensions, and other benefits for members of Congress?
Yeah, I think this is sort of a perennial, and we see it not only at the federal level, but at the state level and even the local level. I mean, I've certainly been at school board meetings or, local town and village meetings where members of the public will stand up and say, why should we pay our teachers X or our city councilman Y, because that's more than I earn. And I've never thought that was a particularly convincing argument. I mean, the argument from, resentment isn't really very powerful. But at the federal level, yeah, we see this every so often. I wrote about this the first time around. I wrote about it in 2013, so that was 6 years ago, when there was a similar groundswell to say, let's cut these guys' salaries. And we tend to see it often at times, as it was then in 2013, and I think as it is now, when there's a government shutdown. So rank-and-file government workers, they're not getting paid, and the question is, well, why should the legislators get paid? They're the ones responsible for the shutdown. And I have to say there's some justification for that. I mean, in a case where you've got members of Congress who are distinctly doing nothing about a particular issue that involves pay, especially for pay for federal workers, then I think it's fair to say, you know, why are you getting paid when you're depriving your own employees of pay? But in general, I'm not sure you want to make that argument.
Right. Senator Mike Braun had also back in January, that reminds me, introduced something called the No Budget, No Pay Act, which would have done what you just said. If there's a shutdown because Congress can't arrive at a budget, congressional salaries would stop until the shutdown is ended. Would that be an incentive to avoid unpleasant shutdowns?
Well, I think given the politics in Washington over the last few years, that would mean that nobody got paid ever, because they don't pass budgets anymore. They pass these continuing resolutions. I'm not sure you really want to put that sort of artificial pressure on lawmakers to come to a given outcome, because you may not get the outcome you want. You may get something that's just cranked through in order to end the immediate controversy so they can get paid, and that's not necessarily going to be the best or best considered budget that you want at the federal level. So I think we have to pick and choose what circumstances we want to impose a pay freeze or dock pay for federal lawmakers. I would say a government shutdown, yeah, you can probably make the case for that, but forcing them to do something that really is within their general job description, I don't really think you want to do that.
We're talking about proposed legislation that would end taxpayer-funded pensions for members of Congress and the overall issue of lawmaker pay. Michael Hiltzik is our guest. He's a reporter and columnist for the Los Angeles Times, a business columnist there. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should lawmakers have pensions funded by taxpayers, in effect? What do you think of the idea of cutting lawmaker pay or cutting off salaries during a government shutdown? Do you worry that if the pay is too low, the concerns our guest raised, only wealthy people would be able to run for and stay in office? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with Michael Hiltzik, business columnist for Los Angeles Times. We're talking about pensions and pay for members of Congress. Two Republican senators are looking to end pensions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Would getting rid of pensions or cutting lawmaker pay be good for government? Do you see unintended negative consequences? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. To your calls now, Jeff is with us in Appleton. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. I guess my way of thinking, a pension is kind of a reward for a long career at some place, and I think that's kind of indicative of the problem we have with our legislators. They're treating legislative positions as a career, and term limits, along with getting rid of the pension, I think are both good steps. I cannot think of a single bad thing that could happen by limiting terms and getting rid of pensions.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Michael, Jeff worried that, lawmakers are career legislators, and he's worried about the impact of that. What do you think?
Yeah, I can tell you, coming from a state that has very strict term limits on the state legislature, I would have to say that term limits are a terrible idea. What we've seen in California is that you end up with a legislature in which the lawmakers, just at the point that they actually learn how to do their jobs, these are not simple jobs, they're not easy jobs, although that's certainly the public impression, but they have to know stuff. They have to build up a body of knowledge, and in this state, just at the point that that happens, they're basically term limited out. And what happens when you have that sort of situation is that lobbyists take over, because lobbyists are the ones who actually spend their careers building up knowledge and information in a particular field, and they're the ones that legislators end up turning to get information. That's not a healthy situation. You want legislators who know their work. You want legislators who know the issues. Sure, there are some who maybe have run out their string, who've served too long. But look, every 2 years, voters can turf out a member of the House of Representatives, and every 6 years they can vote out a member of the Senate. Nothing stopping the voters from firing legislators who they don't think is doing the work. I think these sorts of artificial term limits, they do not work. They're always bad, and they're not a good idea.
Thanks for that call. Going out to Romero in Madison. Hello, what do you think?
Hi. I have more of a question here. Earlier in the program, you had said that, you know, there are a lot of people who are poor that really can't run for office, you know, like a Congress or a senator, because, you know, there's a huge disparity there. So, you know, right now we have people calling for free, you know, education as far as the university system goes. So how do you justify that? Like, can we make, you know, free education so that, you know, we get poor people, you know, more of a chance to get into Congress and into Senate?
Romero, thanks. So the priority of the money, spending our money, maybe not so much on compensation for lawmakers, but things that can lift up poor, lower-income people, he's saying, so they'd have a shot at doing something like that. Michael.
Yeah, I think in a way the caller makes a good point, but it's maybe not the point that he was trying to make. The fact is that one of the reasons that we don't have a lot of support at the State House or on Capitol Hill for a lot of these programs that will help lift up the working class or lower-income people is that the legislators we have aren't familiar with their lifestyles. They're not familiar. They don't come from that milieu anymore, not when their median income is $3 million. If we had a way to incentivize working class Americans and lower income Americans to run for office, then I think we would end up with a Congress and a Senate that was closer, that reflected closer the real way that people live, and they would be much more sensitive to these sorts of needs. And I think we see that also in the approach to Social Security on Capitol Hill. There seems to be a lot of hostility to Social Security by some members of Congress, and that's because most of them don't really have to worry about living on Social Security when they retire. They do get a nice pension, or they have an enormous net worth. Look, Rick Scott's net worth, that's one of the senators who's pushing this idea, his net worth is $230 million. He doesn't have to worry about living on Social Security. He doesn't have to worry about his children needing free college. He's got it knocked. So he's got no incentive to push for the sorts of policies that your caller thinks are necessary, that we all think are necessary.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Michael Hiltzik is with us from Los Angeles Times talking about congressional compensation, what members of Congress and the Senate get paid, their pensions, a couple of Republican senators introducing legislation to end the pension system for members of Congress. Back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Jeff joins us in Superior. Jeff, hello.
Hello, thank you. I believe that you may know the answer to my question. What is the total compensation package? You say that congressmen and senators get the same salary, but don't they get a per diem, and then there's a budget that they have for their staff, and then they get travel expenses, and doesn't the government pay toward their Social Security, and is there workers' compensation that pays? So really, they get paid much more than $174,000. I mean, they have that much more money available.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Michael, you broke some of that down in your column. Do you have some of those numbers to hand?
Yeah, sure. Well, the government pays for the employer's share of Social Security for senators and congressmen and all of their staffs, as private employers do for their employees. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill, they get health care. They actually pay into their health care, just as many of us in the private sector do. They actually, because of the way the law was written, they actually have to get their health coverage through Obamacare, even though it was really not designed for people who were employed, but they do that. And they do get, they don't get a per diem so much, but they do get an office budget. The allowances average, and I did break this down, to about $1.3 million a year for House members and $4.24 million for senators. But out of that, they have to pay for their staff. They do have to pay for travel to their home districts, and the annual expenses vary depending on how far Washington is from their districts. They have to pay for mail. They have to pay for all sorts of office expenses. So yeah, they do get these allowances, but they don't really get anything for free. They get office expenses, and once they get the sum, it's up to them to decide how to apportion it among staff members, or mail, or travel. But yeah, sure. Your caller is absolutely right. They do get these other things, but they also pay into their health coverage and they pay into their Social Security.
Jeff, thanks for the call. We heard from Stephen Brookfield, who says, if you don't pay salaries for elected officials and their pension, you open the door for more corruption. Do you see that as a concern, Michael?
Yeah, I do, and I mentioned that as well. I mean, the two main reasons that you want to make sure that you're paying your lawmakers adequately is, first of all, as I said, you don't want them all coming from the millionaire class. But second of all, you want to reduce the incentive that they have to see their work in Congress as just a stepping stone to being very, very well paid as lobbyists or in some other walk of life like that. And because of that, if they're thinking ahead to getting a job lobbying Congress, then there's a real danger of their taking steps while they are in Congress to sort of grease the way for their future jobs. You want to discourage that as much as possible.
I think there's a perception, and people might argue maybe a reality, that that's happening now anyway with the current compensation system. We do end up seeing a lot of former lawmakers and other government officials ending up working for some kind of lobbying or advocacy firms.
Well, that's certainly true, and I think there is a significant gap even at $174,000 a year. Plus, some of the members of Congress do get a little bit more for leadership positions, including being speaker and what have you. There's a gap between that salary and what they can earn in an average lobbying job, which I think can be $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 or even more. It depends on how valuable they are and maybe how much they've done for a lobbying agency while they've been in Congress. So I don't think you can ever really close that gap, but you can, I think, narrow it significantly so that not everybody who goes to Washington as a member of Congress or as a senator is just thinking ahead to leaving a job on Capitol Hill and moving over to K Street.
Now, your piece on this was headlined, "Here's Why Congress Deserves a Pay Raise." Yes, a raise. For that to happen, I think it has to happen through legislation. And it seems like if you introduce or support a pay raise for a member of Congress, you've just basically written your next opponent's attack ad against you. Is this something that is likely to actually happen?
Well, it's hard to say. There are ways to do it so that the actual members of Congress who are voting can sort of hide behind procedure. I mean, first of all, the law says, in fact, the Constitution says that they cannot vote a pay raise for themselves that takes place in the year or in the Congress that they voted. In other words, if Congress were to vote a pay raise for House and Senate members that took effect this year or next year, that wouldn't be legal. It would have to take effect the following year after a congressional election. But there have also been proposals to tie congressional salaries to the federal wage scale. You would designate members of Congress as GS something or other, instead of actually saying, you know, we're going to get paid this much. And then every time there's a raise, a general raise for federal employees, it would kick in at some level for them also. So I think you could say, it would be hard to say that they were voting themselves directly a raise. I mean, you could say, well, they've given a raise to federal employees, and that includes themselves, so that's bad. But I think that would be a diluted argument against it.
Michael, thanks a lot for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
That's Michael Hiltzik, business columnist for the Los Angeles Times, joining us to talk about congressional pay and pensions.